At Highland, we're all about celebrating little wins and little ways to innovate digital processes. There's no customer pain point too small for us to help with. Maybe that's why more than half of the Fortune 100 looks to Highland to connect their content and data, improve processes, and turn little efficiencies into big wins for their customers and clients. Highland, intelligent content solutions for innovators everywhere at highland.com.
Joey, boy, don't be tempted to chase with me here. I was bricking.
The referee was absolutely shocking.
Subscribe now to the OTB Rugby podcast stream wherever you get your podcasts, or get the entire OTB catalogue on the OTB Sports app.
Welcome again, everybody, to this week's episode, which is number 9 of the podcast series, where we try and take a slightly deeper look at coaching and look to find ways that we can all do it better. As always, if you're listening to us today for the first time, this podcast is about two main things. Firstly, to try and provide coaches with some actionable information and thoughts that might help their own context of whatever sport or age group that they might be operating in, and also as a fundraiser for Temple Street Children's Hospital. Today's guest is a Kilkenny legend, a Camogie star who have won 12 All-Ireland Intercounty titles as well as 7 more as a club player, before adding to that collection in 2016 as a manager of her own county. Anne Downey talks about her journey through sport and through Camogie specifically, from a player to a manager and coach, how her philosophies like honesty and happy person, happy player guided her coaching journey, and why girls need more role models, and her desire to see more former female players take up roles managing and coaching their own club and county teams. I hope wherever you're listening, whether you're out for a walk or driving in your car, that you enjoy the next 50 minutes or so. And if you do, be sure to share it around, leave a review, and let me know what you think. You'll find a link to Temple Street fundraiser in the podcast description below or on my Twitter page at Mike Quirk. Hope you enjoy. Okay. Super. So, Anne, yeah, thanks a million for joining us. I appreciate your time. How are you managing through COVID? Everything okay?
Oh, sure. Working from home, I suppose, like most people, and trying to get a bit of a walk in the evening, but looking forward to the bright evenings coming on and maybe getting to travel to farther than the 5K, maybe go to a beach or something. But look, happy to have a job and happy, you know, that we have all belong to me, have our health. And that's the main thing, isn't it?
That's the main thing, yeah. And there's a bit of light at the end of the tunnel, and yeah, we never thought that getting outside 5K would be so important to us.
I know, and even last year, at this time last year when we went down, I remember saying to Nigel, you know, that we'd probably be able to go back hurling in May, and little did we think a year on, you know, it's crazy.
Amazing. I mean, just about a year now, and it's hard to imagine. Kids, my kids just went back to school today again from whatever they were off, obviously, since December, and it is amazing. It's just, if anybody had told you this a year ago or 2 years ago, you just wouldn't believe how our lives changed, you know. And maybe just for the people that are not familiar with you, would you mind just giving us a brief run through your playing days with Kilkenny, and then on to how that turned into coaching and managing?
Yeah, I suppose we started, Angela and myself started playing first with St. Paul's. We're from a little village called Ballyragget in County Kilkenny. And there wasn't a Camogie club here, but there was inside in Kilkenny City. And that was really made up of players from different villages, you know. So we joined the city team. And 74, 72 really was our first year that we would have been involved in with Kilkenny. I wasn't a sub. I wasn't on the panel that year, but Angela did play against Cork in 72. And in 74, both of us were on the panel. It was the first year that Kilkenny won their first senior Camogie All-Ireland. Nice. And I suppose from 74 to 94 was the last time that we won, and 99 was the last time that I played for Kilkenny.
Right.
So after the Camogie, I suppose, really, I just got involved in coaching, I suppose, more by accident, and that there wasn't an awful lot of people putting their hand up in Kilkenny to take charge of teams and managers, or that weren't paid or anything. So it was a matter of really just getting involved and trying to put something back into the game after all the great years that we had. And that's really how I got involved. I was involved with the junior team and the senior team in 2002, and we bowed out in the semi-final of the senior, and we won the junior All-Ireland that year, great All-Ireland against Cork in Croke Park. And I suppose that was the start of my involvement. I was involved for a few years, then I left and I came back in 2009. We didn't have much success at senior level either, but we won the intermediate in 2011. Then I left again and came back in 2016 and we won the senior and we were beaten in 17, 18 and 19. Mm-hmm. So after that, then that was 2019 was my last involvement with the seniors.
Right.
That's really it in a nutshell.
It's quite a nutshell. You left out about 12 All-Ireland titles there and about seven club All-Irelands and stuff as a player. Yeah. But, so it's funny, you went from playing so into managing or coaching immediately at inter-county level, is that right?
I probably was at home playing golf for a year, to be honest. I think I finished in, I'm useless with dates, but Tipperary were after winning their first All-Ireland and I was on the panel that day, I came on as a sub, and that was my last involvement with the county. And I played probably for a few years with Liz Downey after that. But once I finished playing, I probably did nothing for a year and missed the involvement, and Kilkenny were looking for someone to get involved at the time. Mm. And as I said, there wasn't that many people putting their hand up to give a hand at Camogie at the time, you know. So I got involved and brought a few people along with me, had a few contacts, and really that's you know, when once I had someone that was going to give me a hand, I was happy to get involved.
Great. And before we get into the coaching side of it, then very, very quickly, did you get more out of, coaching or playing?
I got more out of playing, to be quite honest, because when you're playing, at least you're able to do something about it. But when you're standing on the sideline looking in, you're scratching your head and you're pulling your hair out and you're saying, for God's sake, can't you do this, that or the other? And there's nothing you can do about it. They cross the white line, they're on their own. Yeah. And that, but certainly, you know, when you were playing, if you missed the first ball, well, you could do something about maybe winning the second ball, you know. So playing any day, you know, playing beats coaching every day. Yeah,
It does. And it's gas, isn't it? Like no matter how well a team is prepared or how much work you put into it, it's never the same buzz that you get from being a player and having that satisfaction of performing and winning as you do, even if you're the manager or the coach or something. It's funny that way, yeah.
Well, I suppose when you're the manager, it just comes back that you're responsible for everyone, you know, for the 15 that are on the team and the subs and all the rest. And if they don't perform the way that they can, you know, it is a reflection. I always felt it was a reflection maybe on what we were after doing as a management team. But as you said, there's nothing you can do about it when every team that I was ever involved with are always well prepared, but sure. You know, if they decide to throw the ball over the bar instead of sticking it in the back of the net at times where they could have, you know, there's not an awful lot you can do about it. But it brings different headaches, you know, as I said, on the playing pitch, you can hit someone maybe and take out your frustration, but on the sideline, you can't.
He's probably getting a bit more trouble. So tell me, just to start getting into that side of it. So obviously, if you were only recently finished as a player and then you started that whole coaching, so that was obviously a big influence in terms of your own coaching, what you had done as a player. Where did your ideas or your philosophy for coaching come from, you know, from the start?
Well, you know, I suppose when you go back to when we were playing, even the game has changed from the last time that we won an All-Ireland, say in 94 to when I got involved, back involved even in 2016. But we had won seven in a row with our coach, a man called Tom Ryan. And his philosophy at the time was win your own ball and keep your eye on the ball and, you know, be powerful and be fit. And when I got involved, that's all I knew at the time, to be quite honest. I just made sure that the team were fit and that they knew that if you haven't got the ball in your hand, you can't do anything. Mm. And of course, then we had Kilkenny hurlers being so successful. And at the time, you were allowed to go into Nolan Park and have a look at what was happening, the drills and the training and all the rest. And needless to say, I went in and with my notebook and I would take down all the drills that Mick Dempsey and Martin Fogarty and Noel was doing with him while he was involved. And maybe going back to the Camogie team and implementing that drill that I was after seeing, just to try and freshen it up. Really, that was my coaching, I suppose, or that's what I did when I went coaching. But as I said, I had people involved with me. You know, a guy called Frank Burke was involved with me in 2002. He was a Galway chap, and Tom Doheny, who was a big hurling man in Kilkenny. So I wasn't on my own, you know, and we worked as a team. If something wasn't working at training, we'd have a chat about it and we'd change it up, you know. Yeah. But as I said, every time I went back, Camogie had moved on and things had evolved, you know.
Yeah. And that's very interesting about, you know, going into Nolan Park and having a look at the sessions and taking stuff. Every coach or manager is a bit of a magpie, and you're trying to pick, you know, little nuggets from everywhere. But and that's something now with a lot of inter-county teams have their sessions behind closed doors, which denies an awful lot of, you know, club coaches as well as everybody else the opportunity to go in and maybe pick a few nuggets and learn from people what they're doing.
Yeah, it is, you know, frustrating and really disappointing that we can't do that, regardless of, even if it was a football team that you could go in and look at. You know, there's so much to learn from every team, and it's a real disappointment that we can't do that. And I know, I can understand they want their own sessions and they're putting stuff together, but even if it was open from earlier on in the season, you know, until the championship or even to get into for the league, and just to be able to learn and to keep people interested and to pick up ideas, because there's nothing as bad as having a stale session, you know. If you have to keep things nowadays, you know, we used to just go running and go playing, that was it, but everything has evolved, and just to try and keep the sessions fresh and to learn those new skills. Certainly I wouldn't have been able to move on if I hadn't been able to get into Nolan Park, to be honest.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Yeah, and it was something I'm involved with Leash at the moment, and it was something that we were very anxious to do last year was, yeah, I know COVID kind of scuppered it, but it was just to really put that message out to the clubs that our sessions were wide open and people were more than welcome to come in, and if they want to ask a few questions after, ask a few questions, because, you know, ultimately all you're trying to do is, if they can learn something from what's going on there, that they can take it back to their club, and you're trying to raise the whole standard of it. And that idea of closing the sessions for a couple of days, you know, the session maybe, you know, coming up to a big game or whatever, of course, no problem there. But for the generic stuff, sure, it's great for coaches to get in and have a look at it, you know. But that's a different world. But in terms of the coaching, so on, just... Now, obviously, and you're saying there was other people with you and all that, but for yourself, your own idea on coaching, what do you, when I say coaching, what is it that comes into your head? What does that mean to you, that kind of term, in terms of sports?
Well, I suppose, Mike, I was lucky to be involved with people that were able to play the game. You know, if I was to go back and coach an under 10 or an under 12 team, I probably would struggle. But like, when a team came to me, they had most of the basics, but it was to improve their skill. And I suppose maybe to get them to understand how important it was to be, keep your eye on the ball, or to be first to the ball. And also, you know, to be aware of what is happening around you. You know, you were playing centre back, that didn't mean that you zoned out if the ball wasn't in your position. You had to know how a player up the pitch was motoring, whether they were going good, whether they were struggling. Even the same from the goalkeeper out for her puck outs. You know, if she was pucking out to someone that you know, wasn't able to win her ball or was struggling on the day, to make sure that you change it up. And I suppose to be aware of the people that were around you. That was the one thing, I suppose, with Camogie. You know, they tend to just maybe hit the ball for the sake of hitting it, but we kind of tried to put a structure on the play. Well and good, if you weren't there to put it into someone's hand, put it into space. And that was a big, I suppose, learning curve for a lot of the teams that I got involved with, because, I mean, when I was playing, it was only a matter of getting the ball out of your own area. I played centre of the field, and it was an awful lot of ground hurling. But players don't want to play ground hurling now. They want to be able to strike the ball out of their hand. But as I said, as it evolved, of course, our way of playing changed as well. When we came back to 2016, Paddy Mullally was the coach at the time, and we played with a sweeper. That took a lot of coaching, you know, and just to have the half forwards working hard and coming back and even from the centre of the field. You know, it took a lot of hard work and on the girls' part and on our part to kind of get that message across. But I suppose the one thing about coaching is you have to have the skills. You can run for the whole day, but if you're not able to strike, if you're not able to catch, if you haven't got the vision maybe to put the ball into the right place at times, you know, you're not on a winner.
Yeah. And like now, strength and conditioning and psychology and nutrition and all those things are big growing areas of sports and Gaelic games and every sport.
Yeah.
But the skills are still ultimately the things that are going to decide. Like your Dublins and these, they're fantastic athletes, but they're still an incredibly skillful team and people that are able to do what they want with the ball, you know?
Well, a lot of the teams that, you know, when you have a team of 15, they're not all going to be as skillful as, you know, as the next. And you will have to have a player that is physical and strong and they're able to do a job, whether it is just marking someone and stopping them hurling. You know, that's an important role as well. But as you said, it is basically being able to strike off right and off left, throw the ball over the bar. And I suppose, again, with Camogie, and because Camogie players haven't got the same power as the men, they're probably not able to take a point from the centre of the field. Out of the 15 that you would have, I'd say maybe if you had three or four that could throw the ball over the bar. And that was one thing that we worked on every time we went to training. You know, if we only did 5 or 10 minutes at one side, they're at one side of the sideline, the others, but invariably by the time they have the 5 minutes over, they're nearly into the middle of the pitch at one another, you know. To get them that long distance striking, it was something that we worked a lot on because we had to. But again, it is all about skill. It is all about being able to keep your eye on the ball and what first touch, you know, first touch again is so important. And we would tell them, get to a ball, Ali. Use the gable end of your wall, even if it's only a tennis ball, because, you know, if you're trying to pick a ball 3 or 4 times, sure, it's giving the opposition a chance to get up on top of you, you know. So skill, first touch, first to the ball. Those were really the principles.
And to do that then, look, we've been talking with a lot of coaches in the last couple of weeks about, we'll say, the makeup of their session, you know, whether they're doing a lot of drills or games or whatever it is. How did you go about doing that? I mean, people say, like, there's a big move, obviously, towards this games-based approach and that people are predominantly now trying to play small-sided games and do different things. But in terms of incorporating the skill work, then how would you have worked on that stuff? Was it a lot of drill stuff, or would you have been doing a lot of games in the sessions?
Well, the session would always last only about 1 hour and 20 minutes, and that would include their warm up and their cool down. And usually, the session would start with really drills for their ball to hand or ball on the ground. We wouldn't play a game every night, to be quite honest. We might play mini games, maybe 5 against 5. Maybe on the second night, we might have 15 against 15. But certainly when we were coming up to a big game, we probably would play the 15 against 15. But most of it, our sessions would have been with ball in hand. It wouldn't have been running just for the sake of running. They were doing the running, but they didn't realise it because we had a skill built into the session. And I suppose the game might only last for a quarter of an hour. We wouldn't always have, you know, a training, especially when we were only starting off, we'd only have a game for a quarter of an hour maybe. And we might have a game for 2 20-minutes or before a big semi-final or a final, you know, just again, so that the girls would know what we were asking for them. We do an awful lot of work on our puck-outs so that they know to be under a breaking ball and where they should be standing. And that can take time, especially if a new manager comes in and he's trying to put his own stamp on it. And certainly from, I suppose, 2017, 18 and 19, we worked an awful lot on our puck-outs and breaking ball. You know, it's so important to be able to win your own puck-out. And if you don't, that there's someone in for breaking ball and that they know, you know. So it was, again, moving away from what we did when we were playing ourselves. You know, you ran around the pitch and Tom would have you run into the centre of the field and back in. You could do maybe 10 of those. And but most of it was hurling, to be quite honest, when we were. But you just have to have the sessions, I suppose, different every night, because You don't want them to get bored, and you don't want them to be doing the same session every night. But we mixed it up, you know. And in latter years, I suppose, we had someone that would work with the forwards and their movement, and take the forwards on their own, and maybe just getting someone to throw a ball into them, and, you know, be aware of where everyone else was going or where the ball should go. You know, there's a lot. It's so technical now. It's nearly gone mad. You know, at times you're saying to yourself, well, look, are we trying to, are they robots? Are we not, are we taking that instinct from them that, you know, they know themselves what to do? You can, but some people do need coaching and some people don't.
Yeah. And I suppose the big thing now is that the use of the games, you know, and if you're talking about developing awareness or to know where each other are, what they like to do, you're not going to get that doing drills. It has to be games. It has to be that you're exposing them to those chances to make decisions and to do different things, really, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, you're caught, I suppose, between a rock and a hard place, because if you're playing games every night, when they get to a game, then is that bite gone from them? Do you know what I mean? They're sick of that. Like, we always found that, you know, when they're busting for another 5 minutes, give us 5 minutes, we'd say no. You know, that you hope that they're going hungry in for a game, and they know that they have the work done behind them, and, you know, they're full of confidence in their own ability. But certainly for the last few years, I have to say, unless we had a challenge game, which was, again, would only be at the start of the season, certainly coming up to a championship or 2 weeks before a championship, it would be all, you know, only 15 minute games, but certainly no more than that.
Yeah. And just outside of the ball stuff or the actual content of the sessions, what were some of the things with coaching or managing that you found, you know, not challenging as such, but just what were the other aspects of coaching and managing away from actually designing sessions and running sessions that you found, you know, this is a little different here to being a player?
Well, I suppose when I came back in 16, I had been with WIT in Waterford for 14 and 15, I think it was. When I came back to the setup in 16, it was completely different to when we were playing, and even when I had been there in 2002, because I suppose now we were talking about mental health and how players were coping outside their training sessions or outside the panel, you know, that have a big emphasis on getting their leaving cert. And I suppose, again, and I hate reverting back to when we were playing, but, you know, you did your leaving cert and that was it. You didn't even wait to see how many points you got. You know, you had it done and all you wanted to do was play camogie. But now, it's so important for the girls to have their leaving cert and college and obviously relationships and all that. Mm. And suddenly you're just dealing with, you know, a different mindset altogether. You know, you can't just expect them to turn up to training and thinking that everything is happy with them, and you have to be able to spot maybe if there's something wrong or if they're not in form, and to take them aside and have a little chat with them. And I mean, that never happened when we were playing,
right?
And it didn't even happen, I suppose, in 2002 or 2011 when I was involved myself. We just went to the training sessions and you turned up and you trained and you were expected to train. But certainly by 2016, we were more aware of, you know, people's well-being, really. Mm. And again, going back to 2016, it was the first time that we had a doctor involved with us. Okay. I got Dr. Martin O'Brien involved, and we had our full-time physio, which was Nicola Aylward. And then Noreen Roach, who's involved with Kilkenny senior hurling team for the last few years. Noreen would give us a few pointers, came in and had a chat with the girls about their diet and how important it was and their sleep, all that. It had changed so much in just in from 2011 to 2016, which was only the 5 years. But I suppose that's the way the hurling teams were going as well, and the camogie teams kind of expected it as well, although you couldn't afford it. We couldn't afford it at the time. And the people that got involved were all, you know, there for the good of camogie, to be honest. They weren't getting paid in that. So it was totally professional set up then by the time we got to 2016. But again, going back to your question, I suppose, is just to be able to pinpoint if someone is coming to train and they're not themselves, you know, if they're just off and that they may not want to talk to you, but that there was someone there that they could talk to. And we got Dr. Fergus Heffernan involved with us, who is a psychologist here in Kilkenny, and he would speak to the girls. And even Nicola, you know, when they'd go into physio, they'd have a chat with Nicola. So yeah. All that helped. And it's all about really talking and trying to make them comfortable, you know, that it was a safe haven. If they needed to chat, we were there, whether it was, you know, X, Y, and Z that spoke to them. But that I found that it was really important for the girls. And I suppose it helped the team as well. And it helps the player more so than anything else, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's definitely the biggest shift, really, isn't it? You can have all your strength and conditioning and all the other stuff, the nutrition and but it's really that, you know, you call it mental health, but it's that not notion of valuing the person, you know, ahead of the player. And then obviously the player is very important to us and the team, but about how they are and the leaving. So that's interesting, you know, and I just find that's really where sports coaching is going now, that we're becoming far more aware of the entire person as opposed to just the product on the field, really.
Well, I suppose even in there, I mean, our philosophy was that if you have a happy person, you have a happy player. Mm-hmm. You know, if a player is not happy, they're not going to perform for you. So it's up to you really just to help them. And, you know, to try and get an enjoyment out of it. I know when you get to a big match and you can say to a player, you know, try and enjoy it, you know, which for me was a whole load of, you know what, you know, on the day you're so nervous that you're nearly only enjoying it when the final whistle is gone. But you try, certainly for the training, you try and bring a bit of crack into it. You know, it's not where I would be, you know, expect a person to give 100%, but I wasn't averse either to having a bit of crack at training and having a bit of crack with the girls and, you know, just making sure that they were comfortable in the surroundings and that they knew that we appreciated the effort that they were given to Kilkenny Camogie in that. But it was, again, as I said, it's really all about talking, you know, and having your little sessions. You know, I suppose what we did in 2016, again, is we had two senior players and we had two junior players and we had them as reps. So they had their own little meeting. And if there was something that the panel weren't happy with, that the reps would come to us or come to Angela or Breda, who were giving me a hand at the time, and say, look, we didn't enjoy that session, or can we have food, or can we do this? And we were listening to it, you know, and they were happy to do that. So it was being able to have a two-way conversation. They felt that they could say what they liked or what they wanted to say, and they weren't going to be reprimanded for it. And if we went back with an explanation why we weren't doing such a thing, they were happy. And so were we, whether it was about playing or whether it was about the way we played or the style of play or where we were positioning a player. You know, once there was dialogue and there was an open conversation, I think we were all happy, and certainly the players were.
Yeah. And again, that's another really powerful thing, that the players feel that they have, you know, they have a bit of ownership over the whole thing, that it's not just being dictated to by a manager or coach or whatever. Yeah. That's interesting. Yeah. And that, you know, you're talking about that, like, little leadership group there, really, or the two reps, or as you call them. Was that something that came later or earlier when you were managing?
Well, only in 2016, again. Right. Certainly hadn't it earlier on in the years. And I suppose, again, you know, if they're speaking about it, they're not going home bitching about it, and it's not on their mind. Do you know what I mean? Because after every game, we would sit down with them and we'd have a discussion. Look, what went wrong, or what did you think we did well, or what do you think we could do better? And again, invariably, when the management team would be with them, you'd only have one or two girls maybe would speak up. But when we left them on their own, they had the conversation among themselves, even the quieter girls, you know, so they all got involved. And it was a panel. It was a collective effort from the panel. It wasn't just one or two players, you know, so it was. That was something that, you know, we never had when we were playing. And obviously, certainly when I was involved in 2002 and in 2011, we didn't have it either. You know, you just, gave out the jersey, told them they were playing there, whether they liked it or not, you know, and they just put up with it, you know. But I suppose times have changed, and players, both male and female, kind of do need an explanation, or they're not shy about asking, well, why aren't I playing, or why are you playing me here? In our day, I suppose you're happy to get on the team, and you were told that. And even going back to 2011, if someone was picked, you know, you're on the team, you'd be bloody grateful that you are, you know. But I suppose maybe people are more mature, players are more mature now than we were when we were playing, and they're not afraid to speak their mind, which is a good thing.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And they want that information. They want to know, you know, what are you thinking? Why are you thinking of putting me here? And what's the job that you have? You know, they want the specific kind of feedback that'll help their own performance, I suppose.
Or why did you take me off?
I suppose you're covering it, I suppose, really. But that evolution, like from when you were playing yourself and the coaching, you know, that you would have had to your last experience, I suppose, with Kilkenny, it's a fairly dramatic shift, really, isn't it?
It is huge, absolutely. But you know, when we were playing, it was a 12-a-side and the pitch was shorter, and it was actually more physical when we were playing. Right. You know, you talk about maybe getting ball in hand and going on a solo. You wouldn't have a hope of doing it then, you know, because it was brute force. I mean, some of the games were really, really physical, and you know, our training session was, you just arrived, you know, for training, you were togged out. There was no showering facilities, there was no toilets. We trained in Kieran's College. You did your running, you got into your car, and if you were lucky enough, if your father stopped at the chipper on the way home to get you a bag of chips, and that didn't happen only now and again, to be quite honest. But you know, when you, that was in the 70s, when you go back to 2016, how professional it is, and you know how the girls look after themselves, even with their diet. And you know, Angela and myself would have used the gym, and when we were playing, of course, in the summers, there's no way you'd be allowed to go swimming and all that. But that came from home. That didn't come from the management. That was my father. You know, you can't go swimming, you have a game on such and such. But now the girls, you know, they just look after themselves so well, whether they're in season or not. You know, they're looking at their diet and they're doing the recovery and they're going to the gym. And, you know, I've just often said to Angela, you know, if we had to have all those facilities, you know, maybe we'd have won more, but you can't be too greedy, you know.
Yeah, you're being greedy now.
Yeah.
It's funny, you're talking there about no showers and maybe a bag of chips. It reminded me of just finishing out last season, really, with the whole COVID stuff I remember we went on a trip and we stopped in a club on the way to the county grounds, and we ate out of plastic things in the boot of your car. It was like you were a young fella going back to games you used to go to with your parents and stuff. It was funny, but we were just glad to get playing as opposed to anything else.
I know, yeah. Even, well, I suppose, again, that was when you speak about food, you know, it was, again, 2016, it was stopping 2 hours beforehand, you know, because this was something that Noreen had brought into it, you know, make sure that you're after eating your matches at 4, you have to have your last meal at 2. So going to an All-Ireland or semi-final, you had to be in a hotel, you know, maybe at 1:30 so that they had their food. So that was all, again, it was something that we never had, you know. And again, immediately 20 minutes after their training, which is, the whole thing has evolved so much. I mean, talked about being professional, they are professional. Be quite honest, just not getting the money for it.
Yeah, definitely. It's amazing. Like the thing you said there about even now, like there was always a period there of a few months where everybody used kind of let themselves slide a little bit and then come back a couple of kg overweight or a couple of stone overweight.
Yeah.
Now that stuff is generally, it's gone. Like people finish it in one kind of shape and they come back in generally a similar enough kind of shape, really, don't they?
Yeah, they do, really. I suppose they're just thinking that they want to be able to do the hard graft when they get back, you know, they don't want to be left behind. You know, or maybe with the camogie and the hurling and the football season, or for players now, it's so short, it's not the longevity that it used to be. You know, that they could play for 20 years. I suppose maybe hurlers, I don't know, maybe have their 10 years if they mind themselves. But, and I suppose that's all part of it now, you know. If you want to stay playing, you just have to look after yourself.
Maximise your time, I suppose. I see there, I was just reading that when you took over Kilkenny, you I think there was one other female manager at the time managing an intercounty Camogie team. What's that kind of number like now? Has that number gone up or down?
I would say I don't think there's any female in charge of a team now, to be quite honest. I could be wrong, but off the top of my head, there isn't anyone. I know that Tipperary did have last year, but Billy was back in 2020. Billy came back, but there was a lady that took over from him for 1 year. But I don't think, you know, any of the teams that come to mind now have all, they have a male trainer, a male management over them. Yeah.
Have you any explanation or any theory as to why there isn't more?
I suppose, it's a time thing, really, number one, and it's a confidence thing, the other. You know, I mean, you just try, give it a go. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work. But maybe, too, it is, you know, when you go into a team, whether it's a male or a female, that, you know, the Camogie team look up to a hurler or that has, you know, maybe has done it all. To say that we hadn't or I hadn't at the time, but... for me going in, it was the people really that I brought with me. You know, they were great hurlers themselves. We all had the knowledge and we worked together. And I suppose a coach or a manager really is good, only as good as the panel of management that they have with them. But certainly, I suppose the big thing is the commitment, because it's not just the nights that you go training, you know, the Monday, Wednesday or the Friday or the Sunday. It's 7 days a week and it's looking at videos and it's an awful lot of time, you know, to see, have a look at the opposition or have a look at your own game. And, you know, that could eat into 3 or 4 hours every night.
Yeah.
Planning the session and trying to get pitches and... making sure that everyone is okay and working around the players, you know. So it is a huge commitment, and I don't think the women have the confidence, to be quite honest, you know. And I would say to anyone that is interested in getting involved, even start with an under 12, under 14, under 15, a minor team in your club, and if you feel that you have the confidence, you know, to go for it, you know. It's the one thing that I would say, because if you don't do it, you could regret that you didn't try it. And if you tried and it doesn't work, well, so be it. I tried, it didn't work. I can't do any more. You know, it wasn't for me. You know, but certainly I'd love to see more players and more ex-former Camogie players get involved. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And maybe just back to your own improvement as a coach. Like, I'm conscious here, and that there'll be people listening to this from Camogie, football, basketball, rugby, loads of different sports. And a lot of people that have contacted me have been moms or dads starting to help out with their own kids at, you know, under sixes, eights, tens, who are getting involved in whatever sport it might be. So I'm always trying to find little bits and pieces for them as well, that'll be able to kind of help them, you know, and give them a little head start. But in terms of improvements that you would have made in your own kind of coaching and managing, from the time you started to when you finished, not the exterior stuff about the nutrition or the professionalization, but your own kind of improvements, things that you started with and you said, no, do you know what, if I had my time back now, I would do it this way because this is a little bit better.
Well, I suppose first I'd say to Mike that any panel that I was ever involved with, I was always honest with them. You might have a panel of 30 players, you have to say to them, the 30 get the same opportunities from 1 to 30, whether it's the training, the coaching, the nutrition, whatever. But you can't guarantee game time for 30 players, and they have to be able to accept that. Okay, that's the one, because only 15 can play and only 5 can come on as a sub. So as long as their expectations are not, well, I should be number one, when actually you're probably not going to be number one. But certainly from where we started, by the time I finished, I suppose we were able to, or I could see if we had a session, if we were in the middle of a game that wasn't going well, we stopped it, not to leave the game go on. We'd say, look, we're not getting anything out of that, this session. You're not putting in the effort. We're going to go back to doing a bit of running, or we're going to go back to do some skill work. but you have to be able to maybe see that, you know, that this is not working. And I suppose for young people starting off with younger players, they have to be make sure that everyone is involved. Because if you have 40 kids that are trying to start off, they are obviously not going to be on the ball for the length of time that they're on the pitch, and then they're getting bored. So it's breaking them up into small little mini games to keep everyone involved and try and keep the enjoyment in it. But what your question was, from the time we started until the time we finished, again, was just to be able to tell the girls, you know, why they're not first to the ball or what they're doing wrong, that they're taking three or four goes to pick. They're not bending their back. They're not holding the hurl properly. Their feet aren't right. Just all those little things, you know, that was, I suppose, something that we just had, all of us, you know, when we started playing. All the girls that I played with, they were all great camogie players. Not that the girls are not now, but you still have to work on your skills. You know, you still have to work on the basics. And for me, the basics are first to the ball and first touch. First touch, obviously, and be first to the ball, you know. I think, I don't know if that answers your question now.
Yeah, no, like you've honesty there, and that stuff, feedback, you know, like I think the feedback is a huge one, and it's one like you're saying, it's something now that players are really, really looking for. They want to, you know, I'm not sure, is it a social media driven thing with likes and favorites and all that, or is it just people now want to know, What did you think of my performance and how do you think I can get better, so that if I can satisfy what you want me to do, then I've got a better chance of being on the team or staying on the team or coming on or whatever it is. And I think that's a great challenge for coaches then, because it challenges us to actually kind of have a proper appreciation of what we are looking for from players. Like, and again, if I'm talking about, you know, under 10s, you know, we're saying that all we're looking for is really basic stuff, and we're trying to encourage that they're having fun and enjoying themselves and getting loads of touches of the ball, and that they want to keep coming back. And as you go up the ladder, obviously, then you have to be more specific about those kind of things that you're talking about, really. Like, I was just when I was doing a little bit of reading, and I see you took over a male hurling team in Kilkenny. Was that a couple of years ago?
I got involved with John Locke's, John Powers' team back in, I think it was 2004.
Oh, was it? Okay.
Yeah. And then last year I got involved with St. Patrick's Ballyragget, the parish team here.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was last year's one I would have seen it. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And just, I was only just, what were the kind of coaching differences that you noticed with a male team or a female team? Were there any challenges or differences that you really jumped out at you?
Not really, to be honest. I suppose 2007 was the first time I got involved with the boys here in the village. We were minor, and I wasn't long out of playing my camogie, I suppose, and they knew, obviously, from living in the village who I was and what I had won, and there was great respect. 2011, we won the minor in 2007, and we won the under 21 championship in 2011. So when I went back last year, again, we had more or less the same group of players, and it's the same principles. You know, you have to be able to hurl. It's a club now. It's a club team, because obviously you're not going to have, the skill standard is not going to be the same as a county standard. And there's guys that are able to do one thing and they're not able to do something else. But again, it's working on their fitness and their first touch. And I suppose now we're looking at game management. This was a word that was never used when we were playing. And game management, I suppose, is something that you can tell the guys about, but when it's happening on the pitch, if they're not able to do it, you have a problem. And I did find that with the club, you know, where we could have, you know, we actually went from intermediate to junior. We had 15 weeks with the guys because of the COVID, and we were beaten in a relegation. And I suppose with the time up, I think we were, hard to believe, we were 4 or 5 pints up and ended up being beaten.
Right.
But it just all came down to game management. You know, not throwing the ball out the side or taking their time over free or not getting themselves set. So I found that difficult to, with the club team and with the boys team, to be quite honest, you know, because the lads would just play on and play on and play on and waiting on the final whistle, you know, whereas maybe the girls in the latter years that I was with them were more conscious. So we had learned from our experience in 2017 when we should have put the ball in the Hogan stand, and instead of that, Don and Cork won by a point, we'd have got a draw out of it the same day. But with regard to the commitment from the lads, and I suppose their attitude towards me, was first class. They couldn't have been more mannerly. And I suppose the biggest challenge with any club is just to try and manage the guys as well, because they're farming, or COVID was a difficult year for everyone, you know, to try and get them to the pitch when you wanted them. No challenge games, you know, we were a new management team coming in, we had two challenge games, which wasn't easy either. But I suppose the big difference for me with the guys and the girls was just to get them to understand that game management thing and why you wanted to do it, or why you needed someone to go down with an injury when the opposition were on, or on top, you know, and they didn't understand, you know. But certainly with regard to the coaching and the skill level, it is exactly the same. Yeah. You know, it's, the camogie is every bit as skillful as the hurling. And if and you know, I've said this before, if you look at the four All-Irelands that were played in December, the ladies' football, the camogie, the hurling, the football, for my mind, the camogie All-Ireland was the best All-Ireland this year.
Right.
You know, it wasn't a runaway. It was a great game. It was a great spectacle, great skill. And when you look at, I suppose, the hurling All-Ireland, it was nearly a foregone conclusion before it was played. Yeah. Liam Cahill won't like me saying that, but I suppose on the day, Limerick were a great team.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And we needn't talk about the hurling or the football.
No, you know? No, not for now. That game management is interesting, though, and it comes from the experiences that you talk about, really, isn't it? Like if you get burned one year, that'll stay with you. If you're in a similar position the next year, you're hoping that obviously takes over and has an impact, really, you know. But I read Jackie Hurley's book. You know, Jackie, she brought out a book, Girls Play Too. I have a small daughter who's 8, and I'm doing everything in my power to try and encourage her to play any sport, really. I don't care what kind of sport it is. Now, she's a very active child. She's constantly doing stuff, gymnastics, all this. But just trying to get her to play anything, you know, camogie, basketball. And that idea of seeing people, you know, seeing girls playing football for Kerry, or playing for their club, or playing basketball for somebody. It got me when I saw that there wasn't really female managers in there at camogie or in any other sport. It's that kind of an idea that if you can't see somebody there doing it, it's harder for the next generation to kind of say, you know what, that's a pretty cool thing to do. I'd like to see myself doing that at club level or county level or whatever. So it's kind of an interesting one that there isn't a whole pile of female managers out there at the moment. Mm.
Well, I suppose for anyone that's getting involved in under 10s or under whatever, you know, what drives me cracked is when I see even the chaps below on the hurling pitch here, under 12s, and they're asking them to lap a pitch. You know, it's all about the skill, you know, and the kids enjoy having the game. They'll learn how to run eventually. You know, and their fitness will come with that game. You know, I know sometimes you have them like a hen with a hot potato, they're all around the ball and that, but when you have little mini games, that does help. So for anyone starting off, it's really get the basics right, get their holding their hurl right, or kicking the ball right, or get their first touch right, all those skills first, and forget about the running. And as you said, it's important that they have role models. It really is. And I suppose you have them in Kerry with your footballers, and we have them in Kilkenny with our camogie players and our hurlers. And that is so important. But in Kerry too, there's also some great camogie players, you know, but you have to have a role model. You have, regardless of what sport. And as you said, I mean, when we started off here in the village, our sport from our house was running. You know, we were with the City Harriers, and it was a case of the whole family getting into the car, and we went off running wherever it happened. And when the Camogie started, it was the whole family going to the Camogie matches as well. But I suppose, too, what I'd say is the parents, you know, encourage rather than expect. You know, don't expect your child to go to the Olympics or play in Croke Park. You know, just encourage them and it'll happen. If it's meant to be, it will happen. But encourage them to stay at the sport, because you get so much out of it from meeting people. And it's also a barrier for them, you know, in later life, you know, whether they're 16, 17, that they can meet their friends. And again, going back to the mental health thing, you know, they can have a chat with them and they're happy to meet and maybe talk to them, and when they mightn't speak to someone at home. So it's just so important to keep them involved and not to put too much pressure on them. You know, just enjoy it. Make it enjoyable. Make them look forward to going to the session.
Like I mentioned it last week. There's very few people that are playing the game at under six or under eight level that are going to be intercounty, or that are going to be international athletes, or they're going to represent their country. That's still a small percentage of people. The vast majority of people playing the game are people that we want to just having a lifelong involvement in sport and physical activity, basically. And if coaches at a young age group can instill that kind of love of the game and love of sport and physical activity, then they're obviously doing a brilliant job with whatever they're doing, you know? And look, brilliant. I want to thank you sincerely for your time. I appreciate it. I would have said it in the introduction already, but for the people that are listening, this is obviously a fundraiser for Temple Street Children's Hospital as well. And I want to say thank you to all the people that have donated so far and that continue to share it around. If you haven't, then you'll find the link to Temple Street in the podcast description or on my Twitter page at Mike Quirk. And every donation goes directly to them. And obviously they're most appreciated by everybody. So, and thanks a million again for your time. Really, really appreciate it.
More than welcome, Mike.